ESPN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome to the True Wealth Show. This is your host, Dave Little John, in studio with my main man,
Matt Dixon.
And this, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week.
It's not the greatest Tuesday I've had all week.
Okay. Well, apparently you crossed an international dateline.
I have. No, it's a good start to the week. Why, David? Because the markets had another good day.
Continue to climb higher. I don't know if it's because of or in spite of itself, right? But the markets have been recovering. If we look at the 52-week range now, 44.48 for the S&P, and we're at 43.78 right now, which means we're, what is that, about 70 points from its 52-week high.
Yeah.
That's solid.
We've been chugging along pretty steady.
Yeah. I mean, it's within about 1.5% of its high water mark. And it's been a pretty solid year if you look at just 2023. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at 2022, it quickly wrecks the context of all of this, you know, because we are still underwater from our high water mark prior to going into the 22 market price adjustment era.
Yes.
Yeah, a.k.a. the bear market. And I will tell you, there are lots of ways to measure this thing.
Right, yeah. Oh, hey, check out my year-to-date returns.
Yep. Well, that is always an element. This is something that I think we're going to uncover more about this today. Like, how do you measure investment success?
Mm-hmm.
Because you need context, right? I mean, year-to-date, right, great.
Right.
But, you know, when did you start? If you started on January 1st, huzzah, you feel great.
That would be a good part to add to the show. What are we talking about today, David? What's on your mind?
Well, so every now and then I like to peel some layers back for our investors. But also, rather than trying to be so broad in topic and what we cover, get a little bit deeper into the weeds.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way that I think our listeners can understand, I want to talk about how risk works in the investment landscape, and more specifically, because people have heard me talk about risk before, and I'm always joking. Like,
are we going to get a little more granular on
today's
show?
So risk is a four-letter word, right? It's also a word that is not necessarily well-defined because it has multiple meanings in finance. I want to talk about for investors, the first question that everybody seems to get, which is, okay, what's your risk tolerance? Okay, and I want to give you guys some insight and a little bit more understanding of why is this question always asked, and how, you know, we're going to peel some layers back on what the risk tolerance is intended for. Because it doesn't mean like how dangerous you're willing to be, although it doesn't not mean that.
Mm-hmm.
It means a lot more than that. And so here is this concept that is seemingly simple, but is also quite complex because it doesn't make everything happen in finance, but it influences so many parts of the market.
Right. And when you think about risk, that word, it doesn't always mean the same thing to the same person at all different times, right? Like,
right,
as times change, so can your viewpoint of your own personal risk.
Right.
It doesn't have to be static.
It's both objective and subjective.
Mm-hmm.
That is what makes this complicated, right?
Right.
And the definition itself is somewhat varied. And so, you know, well, what context are we talking about? And so today we're going to provide some context to risk tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if you are, this should be pretty broadly applicable. Like, if you're out there listening, if you own or are thinking about owning investments, not just investments in the stock market, any investment,
mm-hmm,
whether it's real estate or going into a business venture or any of those other options out there, that, you know, commodity space, you want to become a rancher, right? This is going to be applicable to you. Now, you may have to understand the context, and then the application is unique to your circumstance, but this stuff is applicable for every investor. Okay. So I think there's some real value to be had here if you're listening. The first thing that I want to get right out on the table is you're going to hear a lot of what we're talking about probably relative to the investment markets, and it's more the mainstream traded investment markets. So you're talking about mutual funds, stocks, bonds, exchange-traded funds, things that you're going to find on the NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange or on an over-the-counter bulletin board, something like that. But the things that are relatively liquid and tradable in the stock market, that's mostly what we're talking about. But we will also tell you when we're kind of, hey, this is going to be applicable elsewhere too, because it really will apply. But just for context, so you guys understand, that's what Matt and I are going to be talking about today. Right? So, Matt, let me ask you this question.
Sure.
You're a beginner investor. Let's say you have opened, you come to work and you've got your 401k plan and you're getting started.
Right.
And you're trying to figure out, well, I'm going to take some money out of my paycheck and I'm going to put it into an investment account.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the gate, I've not really given you any other guidance in this. What happens? What do you need to do?
Well, you need to determine how much you're going to contribute, first of all, right?
Okay.
So I'm going to look and say, I'm going to contribute 3%, or maybe I'm going to contribute 5%.
3% of what?
Of whatever it is that I'm making each month.
Okay, so 3% of your paycheck.
Paycheck, right. And so I'm going to look and say, hey, how much can I afford to put away? And that varies from person to person and your, you know, personal beliefs on, you know, how much you figure you should invest and what you want your lifestyle to look like in the future. But that would be where I would start. How much do I want to put in?
And I'm going to give a little bit more because just 401ks get the free money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If your employer offers a match, and let's say the match is 4% or even 5% of your compensation, then put in that.
Yeah. Do whatever you got to get the free. Yeah.
And maybe there's some math to it. The match is not always a dollar-for-dollar match, but often it is. It's
right.
Usually something like, I put in a dollar, they put in a dollar, up to a certain percentage of my paycheck. So get the free money, okay? Because it's free to you, right? And you're earning it in lots of different ways, but it's the employer is willing to put that in on your behalf. So take advantage. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a separate thing. That's just a low risk proposition.
Right. One of the
like free money is a good price.
Yeah. One of the things that I did, and I'm just going to talk about my own personal experience on the radio, but when I first started contributing to my retirement account, I looked at the market as a whole and I said, hey, I think that this thing is a little overcooked. I think that the valuations are pretty high, and I have a feeling that the market is going to probably crawl a little bit lower. So when I first established, you know, my new account, I said, you know what, I'm going to elect to contribute to segments of the market that I feel are a little more resilient to a downturn in the economy. And so I customized my investments to that belief structure. It wasn't permanent, but I said for a season, I'm going to play in a little bit different arena than most people.
All right. Now, I'm going to take this back to the primary question here, which is when you did that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for all of you listening out there, some of you are like, I don't know how to do that. That's okay. This is not the show about how you learn that part of it. It is the show where we talk about, well, why
might you
do something?
Yeah.
And the first question is, Matt,
yeah,
how much of a risk taker are you as an investor?
I personally, I'm pretty risky. I'm willing to, you know, go after some investments that I think have a lot of upside, even though they might be trading at a really steep discount because there's fear involved in the company, for example.
Let's unpack this even further. Matt,
yeah.
Do you want to buy investments that fail?
I don't.
Okay. Big shocker there, right? But are you willing to take the risk that your investment might fail?
Yes.
Okay. So now we have a starting point. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as a risk-free transaction. Even putting money in your mattress carries with it a risk, right?
Right.
There's risk.
House fire.
House fire, theft, loss. You just forget you put it there.
You die in your sleep and no one knows where the money was, and then the mattress gets tossed in
and the garbage. Of course, there's the risk of inflation over time, that your money is not productively working anywhere, and so you're gradually losing purchasing power to inflation because that dollar is non-productive if it's out of circulation.
Right.
Okay. So there are risks, okay, including the risk that any investment has the potential to fail and not return your capital.
Right.
So there are lots of things you can do to manage that risk. We can discuss some of those today, but we're just talking about your willingness to take risk right now. That's the first question. Okay. So what is really buried in the question of how much risk are you willing to take as an investor? Like, what's that question mean?
And it really depends on the person. I mean, what does it mean to you?
I'm going to tell you, I think that they're, for advisors, they are looking for a specific answer. Like when I ask that question, first I'm allowing somebody to simply answer to give me their thoughts on it. Then I want to, through a little bit more questioning,
break down what does that really mean?
What does it mean and why do we care? And if you're curious, if I was to ask you right now, hey, what is your risk tolerance? You might say like, oh, I'm a high risk or low risk. Let's play a little game here. The little game is, in your mind, on a scale of 1 to 10, what kind of risk taker are you? Where 1 is burying it in the backyard and the treasure map is your secret. And 10 is nearest casino you can find and we're betting very poor odds. Okay. Somewhere in there between 1 and 10, where are you? And we're going to come back afterwards and we're going to unpack this concept, okay? And what it means and what, as an investor, we can learn from this risk assessment. But first, we got to get this break in. So stick around and we'll be right back. And again, keep that number in your mind. Somewhere between your between a 1 and a 10. It'll be a fun little exercise. And we're going to help you so that if you are a 401k investor or otherwise, that maybe this will get you a little step closer. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, we got the music and we are back in action. Hey, if you were just joining us, I'm Dave Littlejohn, joined in studio today by
Matt Dixon.
And we are talking about risk tolerance and how risk gets treated in investing. If you want to get caught up, grab our podcast. If you're on the podcast now, you already know how to do this. But for those of you listening live, you can check out our webpage at littlejohnfs.com. Go under the Knowledge Center and you'll see this listed. You can also subscribe at any of your favorite podcast joints. So you go to Apple or Android or wherever you want to do, and you can grab the podcast and you can follow along with us. So for investors, we're trying to take a little deeper dive today into the specifics of risk and risk tolerance and what the word risk means. It gets thrown around a lot. And risk, if you are just to the layman, it's kind of that's like, oh, well, how scary is it, right? High risk, that's where you get hurt somehow or worse. Okay, it sort of has that meaning in an investment world, but it's we don't typically view risk like in the simplest terms, what's the probability of a loss?
Okay? Right. So like if you were to go buy like a treasury yield or something similar, a bank issued CD, you might not experience a whole lot of change in the value because the value was set when you bought it.
Yeah. Yeah. There are, so we're going to try to dial in here. What I'm going to start with is risk. One of the biggest definitions of risk in the investment landscape is how volatile something is, how much it swings up and down. Now, risk of loss is part of that, right? If you are, because basically what happens is the more risk something has in it, the higher the probability of a failure, right? The higher the probability that you won't get your money back, the greater the return must be. Okay, let me say that again, just so you hear it. The higher the probability of not recovering your money, the more it must pay you. And it must pay you, right? Because if I have two investment opportunities, one of them very high return, low risk, the other one very high return, high risk, I will take the low risk investment. Right? What idiot wouldn't?
Yeah.
Right?
It's common
sense. If I could take no risk and get a high return, that's better. So that's the way the world operates, right? If something is super low risk, they don't have to pay you as well. Now, we see this play out in real life all the time. You know where we see it? Credit cards. Or how about car loans? That's probably the most obvious one. You have lousy credit. Okay? One of two ways this happens. One, you have no credit established, and so they don't know how risky you are, and they're not willing to chance it.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, you have validated that you're terrible about making payments on time, and you may not pay at all, in which case you have terrible credit. And in order for somebody to be willing to let you borrow money from them, they're going to charge you a lot. Okay? That is the high-interest auto loan. You have poor credit history. We will loan you money to buy this car because we can take the car back from you if you don't pay. And because if you do pay, we get paid enough to justify it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Versus the person with great credit. What happens to them?
Yeah, you're not going to pay nearly as much in interest.
Yeah. And so you're a lower risk borrower, which means you get to pay less. That's the risk reward relationship flipped around. Now, as an investor, you're the one putting the money to work. And so how likely am I to get paid back?
Mm-hmm.
The less likely I am, or if it's not about whether or not if I get paid back, but how long before I get paid back, or maybe I get paid back, but some days my investment's really high value and other days it's really low value and I have to be patient because I don't want to sell it when it's low value, right? Because I'm going to get stung for that. Well, now we've got ourselves a problem, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
This is volatility. The whipsaws up and down in the market. And so there are lots of things that you can do as an investor to reduce risk.
Mm-hmm.
Much of it comes through math, right? Yes, cursed math.
It's my favorite.
This is what diversification is for.
Right.
Diversification and proper management of correlation amongst the different assets. And if you don't know what that means, see me after class, right? But diversification, correlation, and allocation to different asset classes is a way to spread your risk across multiple areas of the market so that the probability that everything fails simultaneously drops. Okay? Now, what happens if everything fails simultaneously?
Well, then there's a bigger institutional problem.
Right. That's no longer the risk of one single investment. That's like when everything gets hit. Like the Federal Reserve says, we're raising interest rates. Affects everybody.
Yeah, right? No one is spared from the trauma of that.
Yeah, one of them is, I'm in a boat in the ocean and the boat is rocking. The other one is, I'm in a boat in the ocean and the tide goes out.
I feel like that's where we are currently, right? Like there's so many different things that are playing an effect on the market that we're having a really hard time judging. You know, is this a a true bull market recovery, or are we getting faked out and things aren't nearly as good as what they appear to be on paper right now? And there's a lot of things that are playing an effect. We still have inflation. We're still getting pressure from the Fed on rate hikes. The labor market is still strong. There's so many different things that are pushing and pulling that we don't know which direction it's going to go.
Right. And what we're seeing is the market is having trouble pricing risk to some extent. In some ways, it doesn't have trouble at all, right? Like the bond market has a pretty good understanding.
The dividend-paying stocks.
Hmm?
The dividend-paying stocks. We've seen that this year, right? Like the dividend stocks have actually been pretty slow to recover compared to the tech stocks because, why would you buy a dividend stock? Part of it is because you believe in the company, but a lot of people are buying dividend stocks because they want the dividend. They want that return for buying the investment. But if the bond market is over here paying 5%, are those dividend stocks nearly as interesting? So far year to date, they haven't been.
Yeah, there's just so much to it, isn't there?
There is.
I think the challenge that anybody has with the market is we have this tendency to want to say, because I have this pricing model, that tells me this should be the value of something. Therefore, that is the value.
But
the market, it turns out, doesn't care what you
no,
think.
No, it doesn't care.
It does. And it, that's a head scratcher.
Well, look
people.
At companies like NVIDIA or Salesforce, right? And we've talked a little bit about this off air, but you go look at the PE ratios, right? The price that you have to pay for a dollar of earnings on these companies. We've seen NVIDIA over the course of this year, the share price has just gone through the roof. And the price that you have to, I mean, do you know off the top of your head what either of those two companies are trading at when it comes to their price?
So
their
Salesforce,
PE ratio?
The current PE ratio is 549.53.
So $549 per $1 of earnings.
Right. And
yeah.
For NVIDIA, significantly lower, 219.25.
But when you look at the average PE ratio across, you know, the S&P 500, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's probably around $18 per $1
know,
of earnings.
Let's look at, for example, Apple. Another established player
mm-hmm.
that's a huge
probably 30.
31.87.
Yeah, right. So you start looking at these metrics and it's like, where has the money been going? It's been largely flowing into tech stocks with higher PE ratios in an environment where, you know, that's kind of hard to justify paying extremes on the PE ratio with the risk-free rate of return where it's at. This is interesting to me.
Yeah. Well, there are lots. Again, these all come back to pricing rationalizations. And that's
right.
The best way to describe this,
it's exactly.
A rationalization where mm-hmm. you're saying,
someone's willing to pay more.
they're saying, hey, if I do the math this way, it implies the company should be valued this way. And there are lots of different pricing models out there.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where I say things and it frustrates people because somebody's going to say this is non-inclusive the way I describe it too. But the market is a little bit like prom voting. Okay, it's a popularity contest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so what you have is companies that are in the news that have flashy product and they have the attention of people and money is flowing in that direction. And so
right. Well,
when money flow when more buyers are present than sellers, prices go up.
I mean, I guess we can kind of form up that narrative. Look at all of the headline articles. It's all been around AI. It's all been around artificial intelligence, where it's going, how fast it's developing. And then we look and say, okay, well, who's the popular player in that arena? It's NVIDIA, right?
Sure.
And we see a huge surge in price.
Yeah. So
to kind of further your point.
It's... And there's a lot of things that are getting layered in here to this conversation because, yes, what we've just identified is that a lot of the things that you would normally associate with measuring the value of a company are, like the weird thing about, let's use NVIDIA as an example. And let me be clear, we're not recommending NVIDIA when we say this, okay? We're not recommending it. We're not touching it, okay? I do have to disclose that I own some NVIDIA. So, and I can also disclose that I reduced my position in it today, but that is not a recommendation or anything else. That had to do with my personal needs and how I wanted to run an investment strategy personally. Well, the thing about NVIDIA that's interesting is it's not been a super high volatility stock.
Until recently.
Well, and even recently, it's had some ups and downs. Last year, it went down with everything else, and it went down a fair amount. But it's been, if you look at the risk and reward capture recently,
mm-hmm.
it's gone up and up and up and up and up. Which, if you were to use that as your metric, you might it sort of
the up and up and up metric.
It will falsely imply that the stock is safer than you think because its pricing behavior has been pretty stable, mm-hmm. low volatility. And what did we say earlier? Risk is a measure of volatility, okay? But it's also a measure of probability and, well, what could happen,
mm-hmm.
right? And so it doesn't – it's more like just how
well,
much
and
probability.
And it's past performance too. That's all we have is what's happened in the past.
Well, we still have its peers as well,
mm-hmm.
okay? And so right now, if NVIDIA is leading the pack in terms of – the technology and the chip architecture and the sales flow and where everything's going, then you can see why it's a darling.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, should it be 100 times more valuable than all of its peers?
Right.
Right. And should you pay $227 or whatever it is for $1 of earnings when you could pay $31 for a dollar of earnings from Apple?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Again, I'm not making a recommendation. I'm asking you a question. How much should you have to put into an investment to get that money back out? Because if I were looking at NVIDIA with any other metrics besides the prom court contest,
mm-hmm.
I would look at this and say, it is very, very difficult to arrive at a point where this looks like a good investment. It looks like speculation with a tailwind.
Is this an investment or is this a trend?
Well,
you know,
right.
It's tough to discern.
And so that is the question here. And the investment is, could you come back in 5 years and still be in better shape than you are today?
Right.
I mean, and that's not the only question, but that's a good question to start with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, you never know. But if I had to choose between different horses right now, I'm so careful to not make recommendations because there's, you know, rules around this. But a super high PE stock that is in the news because it's got all of the attention right now versus something that has a much lower PE and is much more boring and has a business model that is proven, established, and isn't going anywhere. Okay, I just, as an investor, I find myself thinking a little bit more Warren Buffett-like in a market that's had about a 20-something percent lift off of its market lows.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Since last October, we've seen about a 20% increase in value since last October. And there's no hard and fast rule to this other than sometimes too fast is too fast. Right? And then people get greedy and decide, we made a pretty good recovery. I'm going to take some profits here. And then the market can do a head fake from there.
Yeah, I think people too often overlook timing, right? Because if you go back 6 months and NVIDIA is trading at multi-year lows, this is a completely different conversation. It's not necessarily the company as much as it is the timing.
Well, the market's a voting mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, NVIDIA's leading prom court.
Right. Whereas,
really pretty and really popular. Okay?
Right. Whereas 8 months ago.
But the personality might be iffy.
Yeah.
Man. Well, look, we've talked a little bit of this. We talked about volatility. What I want to do for you guys as investors is get back to what's the practical application in your life. There's a key question that I see, like one of the most common mistakes that I see with investors
mm-hmm.
around risk tolerance and how they set themselves up as investors in what they're doing. And we're going to unpack that, but I'm going to make you stick around. So we'll be right back after this break. And I'm going to tell you what was one of the most common mistakes that I see people make with their risk assessments. That and more. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show, where I am hanging out, Dave Littlejohn, here in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Matt.
Yes.
We are talking about risk tolerance for investors today.
Okay.
Okay. We've talked about the markets and how markets seem to not know how to deal with, or it doesn't really know how to make heads or tails of the risks that are out there right now.
There's just too many things pulling in too many different directions for it to figure itself out.
Well, and I'm not convinced that the way we've always looked at data is going to be the solve for how mm-hmm. we discern in this market. But there are some things I think we can fall back on.
More
that
fundamentals,
will help us, right? And so I said at the break, I want to talk about what is one of the things that I most frequently see. It's a mistake that investors make. Okay. Now, it may not be a mistake. It's a mistake in understanding. But it may still work out. It may not. It may be like, oh, well, it didn't hurt you, but people didn't get why they did it, or they misunderstood and didn't need to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What do you think it is?
Well, I'm not sure which one you're going to choose, but one of the mistakes that I've seen people do is they de-risk themselves too soon in their investments, right? Maybe they hit age 40 and they take the risk off the table because they just can't stand it anymore and they're worried about losing their principal, the amount that they put in. That could be something that someone could make a mistake with. But on the flip side of that too, you have to look at your age and say, you know, is the risk that I'm taking appropriate to where I'm at in my investments? So if you're really young, for example, you might be able to afford to take more risk compared to when you're 65 years old and you're getting ready to retire. Maybe it's appropriate at that time for you to take some risk off the table.
Mm-hmm. You covered lots of area there. The mistake that I most often see is that people assume because they were told, like the industry has told mm-hmm. them that, well, the older you get, the more conservative you need to be as an investor.
Right. Just okay. Going through the motions without knowing what they're actually investing
right.
in.
Right. And so it is, well, I better get more conservative because I'm getting older. And so we have seen an entire generation or an iteration of mutual funds and financial products that have mm-hmm. come out that will automatically become more conservative toward a target date.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, oh, I'm going to retire at age 65. I better be a conservative investor by then because I can't afford to lose. And
that's not necessarily always a good philosophy.
Well, it's not necessarily accurate.
Right.
And it's not necessarily going to be the way to best manage your risk. And it's also not necessarily true. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of true, meaning that it's pretty common that folks will save a nest egg, and then in retirement, they have to spend the nest egg, and they want it to last the rest of their life. And so when you start taking distributions, you may need to be more conservative
sure.
and have more stable
investments. But in the lead up to it, you're saying that snowball effect, the compounding interest, sometimes you need to be able to let the snowball do its thing and get big enough so that there is a big enough chunk when you go to retire.
Well, not just that. If you're going to retire at 62 to 65, it's not like you're dying the next year,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
I mean, you still arguably statistically have a, you know, 15, 20 year lifespan or longer.
Mm-hmm.
So the
maybe
money
your
is
time,
still
yeah.
needs to continue to be productive so that it will continue to last. And so you don't have as much longevity risk.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, are there tools that can help someone try and frame up a picture of what things could look like?
Nope, there's no tools. It's tough. Talk about leading the witness.
I am. That's a not so subtle sale right there, isn't it?
That's funny. Yeah, of course. There's great tools out there that I think investors ought to consider as well. But you know, generically, I'm not convinced that it's automatically a de-risk solution just because mm-hmm. you're getting older. I'm also not convinced that just because somebody's younger, they should take on a lot of risk. There's probably a bit of a sweet spot mathematically. If you take too little risk as an investor, it's almost pointless.
Well, and we also got to differentiate between, are we talking about retirement accounts or are we talking about savings? Because you can invest your savings. You know what I mean? Like, I think for this show, we're mainly talking about retirement accounts. But like what you're talking about, age and risk, it depends on what the money is being used for, if it's a retirement account or if it's savings that you're investing.
Yeah, it's really your whole financial picture determines it, because what your risk tolerance is most applicable for is distribution planning.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most that's the thing that I believe it's most going to wag the dog is if you're taking money out, then you want the money to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need at least a portion of that money to become more stable so that it's available.
Right. Exactly.
You don't want it at risk of going through a downward market cycle and then pulling the money out at the bottom of that cycle where it hurts you more.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to be taking distributions, you need to develop a distribution strategy that may include de-risking your investments to make that work.
Some of it, part of it, or even all
right.
of it. Yeah.
But there are other ways to do that too. You may be able to say, you know, I can afford to put 3 years worth of income in a savings account, and then I can keep the rest of my investments invested because I got 3 years that I don't have to touch them because I got the money set aside.
Right.
Okay. Or here's another one that I see sometimes. I see folks that get into their 70s or 80s and they say, I'm never going to spend this money. Right. And they go, you know, if I'm never going to spend the money and I'm on, you know, pensions and other things and I don't need to worry about it, then they say, you know, how should I invest? And it's literally, well, how do you want to invest? And some of it is even well, how do you want it invested for your heirs to receive it?
Right. What do you want your legacy to look like?
Yeah.
Because then your risk tolerance could go up because you're targeting a higher return.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so it gives you a different set of options because your risk is relative to your circumstance and your need. And that big need is, when do I need the money?
Or do I need the money?
Right.
Yeah.
And so what does that tell us about our risk tolerance? It tells us that it's going to be somewhat dependent on the size of our account.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be our age matters, but that's not what's really doing it. Our age is our proximity to distribution.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, our native risk tolerance of how much can we, like, how much adrenaline can we handle, right? How much of a whipsaw can we tolerate?
I think it's the whole, like, can I sleep at night?
That's
piece.
The one. Yeah. Right? The sleep at night index is, that's probably the first one people think about. And it is real, right? You know, you can't, I don't think it's
right.
wise to buy a bunch of investments that you can't stick with because the volatility is going to bother you too much. And then you're going to find yourself, basically, if it's going up, you're just going to be like, woohoo, it's going up. But if it goes down and you panic and you pull the money out because your risk tolerance was misaligned, then you're really going to harm yourself in that process. So I don't think it's a good idea to over-risk yourself if that's not where your native risk tolerance is. You just got to know that you may be choosing a slower, gentler pathway. It's going to take longer to get there.
Right. And as an advisor, I'm looking at this and saying, you know, I also want my client to be happy because of the relationship's got to be good on both ends,
mm-hmm.
right? Between both the client's viewpoint and if you're not happy, well, then you're going to come back and say, hey, you know, this is bothering me. So
yep.
I think finding that sweet spot is definitely an important piece of the puzzle.
So how does one go about finding that sweet spot?
Well, I see you put the headphones on, so I'm afraid that's a lead-in question, David.
Yeah, it's totally a lead-in question. I think that there is a way for investors to figure out the sweet spot of where you need to be, and we're going to talk about
throwing
that.
Darts.
But first, we got to take a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the last segment of True Wealth today. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn, joined in studio with my main man,
Matt Dixon.
And we've been having just a little bit more of an in-depth session today about investor risk tolerance.
Right.
Now, it's not intended to be a total nerd out deal here, but the reality is so much of investor success outside of the actual investment selection and whether or not you pick big winners or not, right? But so much of the success academically gets built on the foundation of understanding the right amount of risk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I see a lot of investors that are kind of dismissive of this. And so I tend to beat this drum a little bit. Like, Matt, I mean, I've probably driven you up the wall with this because I'm constantly going, there's got to be context. There's got to be context.
Mm-hmm.
What am I talking about?
You're talking about, you know, risk, reward, and where we need to be, right? And we've led into this, right? But I think where we're going with everything is to say, at the end of the day, you need to make a plan. And you need to know what it is that you're trying to achieve. And one of the things that I do with any client or prospect or whoever that comes through the door and wants to talk and we sit down and we look at things is I always start by showing a basic calculator, and it's what do you have right now, and what type of contributions might you make, and what does that mean for your account in the future, given a hypothetical, you know, rate of return. And I always start with like 4 or 5%, and I say, okay, we're here today. What if you get 4 or 5% on average until this age? What does that look like? And then I'll start changing my variables in what I'm inputting and saying, okay, well, what if we do better than that? What if we take on a little bit more risk and get a little bit more return? What does that look like? And sometimes, you know, that 4 or 5% is adequate. And people are like, you know what, that looks great. And to that I say, okay, well, you know, given the lifestyle you want to live, if that works for you, perfect. But sometimes someone says, well, 4 or 5% isn't enough to get me where I want to go. I need closer to 8 or 9%. How do we try and target that? Now, can we guarantee it? No. But we can at least try and set things up to target the type of return that you're looking for so that you can achieve the goals that you have in mind. And so I think the frame up is that making a personalized plan so that you can try and achieve the goals that you're looking to achieve in life. Right. And if you need that type of help, you got to give us a call. It's 541-375-0898. And maybe we can sit down and look at the numbers and say, you know, where do you want to be? What are your goals? And how do we get there?
Right. All of this hinges on what you need.
Exactly. Okay.
And so that's the
funny thing
about
risk. How about what you want?
Well, okay.
Yeah.
Forget
your needs. What do you want? Let's make that happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The whole point is your circumstance is unique to you. There's this end goal, mm-hmm. okay, out there. And a lot of the time when you're really young, you don't know what that is and you have lots of time. And so it's easy to default into investing at a higher risk because you can afford to,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't have that much money in the account relative to your life. And so, okay, I can afford to let it go up and down a little bit because if I lose, you know, lunch tomorrow, I'll keep working. I'm going to anyway. And so you can be very aggressive when you're young because you're not risking very much, right? Mm-hmm. But the table stakes go up as your account grows with time. And so that risk element starts to change and your time element starts to change. And as you get further down the path, you start to figure out what's the life I'm trying to design.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get there, I think that's Matt's primary point is that
yeah.
you may discover that you don't need to take any more risk as an investor. You can be more conservative because you're on the right pathway to get where you're trying to be. But you may also discover that you have not taken on enough risk and the probability of you being successful is yeah. almost zero.
Right.
And therefore, the only way you can give yourself a shot, and it's not a guarantee, but at least you have a shot if you take a more aggressive investment posture. Okay. And that's really what it comes down to. And so just like everything in life, there are seasons, right? And there are seasons where you can be more aggressive, and then there are seasons where it's probably not advisable mm-hmm. to be so aggressive. And it's uniquely personal, okay? But that's the relationship, and that's why risk is so much. When are you taking the money out? What volatility level are you willing to stomach? How much money is actually at risk relative to the rest of the lifestyle you're trying to design, relative to the other things in your life that you're taking risk or not taking risk? And this is going to work across the board for not only stock market, not for just your retirement plans, but for your real estate portfolio, again, how you're running your business and you know, when you decide to retire and how much of a nest egg you're going to need and try to be sustainable and so forth. All those things are going to be baked into that plan.
I feel this is why it's so important to have an advisor that you trust and mesh well with, because sometimes as an investor, if you're going at it by yourself, you might have a theory as to where the markets are and where things are going, and you can get really excited and make a big decision where, you know, maybe that decision's the right one, but it's always helpful to have an advisor or someone that you can bounce an idea off of and say, hey, you know, maybe should we de-risk right now? Maybe you should. But maybe it's time to push more chips in and say, now's a buying opportunity. We need to put both feet in the water and get after things because this is an opportunity.
Could be. Yeah, the shameless plug here just think for a minute about some of the greatest athletes that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they have coaches.
Right.
Right? Greatest golfers still have swing coaches. The swing coach isn't a better golfer than the golfer.
Right.
The swing coach has a different perspective, and they're able to help enhance what is going on.
Oh, David, you and these analogies, they're always so spot on.
This is, I think, the benefit of having, and I've used this one before too, right? The same reason that we don't allow physicians to operate on their own family is because when you get too close to something, the emotions can compromise your decisions, okay? But one of the things that helps you to not get compromised in an otherwise difficult environment is training mm-hmm. and objectivity, right? So as investors, one of the ways we can help our investors is by being the coach and being more objective and being able to look at the circumstance independently from the emotions that you're experiencing. So I think there's a tremendous value there, okay? Mm-hmm. And the other is so many people just don't get around to it.
Yeah.
And that really is the issue too, is that I had the best of intentions, but I didn't do it. And the cost of not doing it is higher than the cost of having somebody get it done for you.
Right.
So I think that's the real takeaway for me from an investment perspective, and why we still have a job and we still have clients.
If you're not going to move the bark mulch, call the person to move the bark mulch for you.
Exactly.
How do they
rotate your tires, right?
Yeah. How do they call the financial mechanic, as you might call it here?
Well, you can give us a shout, 541-375-0898.
Or
go online, email us, info@littlejohnfs.com. Just go to the webpage. Lots of ways to reach us. But hey, that's the music. We're out of town for now. Time for now. We got to run. Until next time, thanks for joining us. I'm David Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brooks Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.